Hey, welcome to Wine and Problems, the mental health podcast. I'm Elliot.
And I'm Liv, and we're your hosts for as long as you need us.
Before we get started, make sure you check in with yourself. How are you feeling today?
Have you had a breakdown? If so, don't stress.
Because we'll probably be joining you soon.
So grab a glass and let's dig up the past.
We hope you've got your shovel, kids.
Because it's gonna get messy.
Hey, hey, welcome back to WAP, episode 6, you're hot and you're cold, you're yes and you're no. On today's episode, we are diving into the many faces of anxiety, and to help us with that today, we have a special guest, a mental health advocate, Alpha Chels. Welcome, Chelsea. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
We are not bad.
So, Chels, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a 26-year-old student, and what am I?
I ask myself that question every day.
Every day.
So I am a student and I work in student support and wellbeing. Yeah, I'm a mental health advocate living with the condition borderline personality disorder.
That's crazy because my sister actually has that as well.
No way.
She's 16. She got diagnosed with it, I think, roughly about, it feels like forever, but I think it's only been about a year and a half.
Yeah, I was not diagnosed early enough because there used to be this preconception that you shouldn't diagnose personality disorders in young people because allegedly you could grow out of certain personality traits as you like went through puberty and sort of found your feet in the world, which I don't necessarily agree with. I mean, I guess it's sometimes that must be true, but my diagnosis was just delayed and prolonged, delayed and prolonged me getting treatment, which kind of sucks. So I'm glad to see younger people being diagnosed if they need to be, because that opens up all the doors to improving their mental health.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, let's jump in to the episode. So to kick off, Chels, why don't you just start from the beginning. Tell us about like where it started, beginning, middle, end. Well, not end, but yeah.
So my journey started when I was a teenager. I always kind of knew something was up, but I couldn't put my finger on it. I was diagnosed at 16 with depressive episodes, which was a misdiagnosis. It didn't really cover the vast majority of symptoms I was experiencing. I did have depressive episodes, but like that's a major part of having borderline personality disorder. You have really high highs and really low lows. But it didn't really encapsulate all the things I was feeling. So I gave it a try. I stuck with the diagnosis for a while. I was on antidepressants that weren't suitable for me, and I tried therapies that didn't work for me. I was on a really high dose of antidepressants that numbed how I was feeling. As I just said, you get the really high highs and the really low lows. But with the medication I was being given, I was dull and numb to all feeling, which was even worse. Like, I would have preferred to deal with the low lows in order to feel anything rather than to just not feel anything at all. So that was quite difficult. And I started sort of fighting for a different diagnosis. And my journey was quite long. I started in the NHS and I was doing like diagnostic testing for BPD, which is quite long. Like, I had to repeat the tests over and over again so they were sure. And then I got into the psychotherapy department, which is the kind of department that deals with people with BPD, and went through more testing, was sort of being screened, I guess, to see who would be a good fit for me and what kind of treatments might work for me. And shortly before my diagnosis was sort of finalized, I missed an appointment or a couple of appointments, but I had phoned in advance to say like I had an exam at uni and it just hadn't been noted down. And I got this letter in the mail that said, sorry, you've been discharged because you're not committing to appointments properly. So that was a big blow. My cousin sadly passed away from suicide. So my family kind of clubbed together and were like, we need you to have a diagnosis, because without one, you're just going to keep sticking in this cycle of like treatments that aren't working. So I ended up going private just to get the diagnosis, just to get the letter that said, this is what's wrong with you. So I finally got my diagnosis age 21. And after that, all the doors started opening. Like, I was given medications that suited my symptoms and didn't dull everything that I was feeling. I started a therapy that was amazing and really worked for me. You know, I always say to people, I live with the condition, I manage the condition. I'll probably always experience certain parts of it, but it doesn't control me anymore. And that's kind of where I'm at.
That is incredible.
And that's such a healthy headspace to be in, because I think a lot of people, when they first start experiencing mental health issues, you just think it controls your life completely. And you think, I have no control of this. This is me now. This is my personality. This is branded on my skin.
Yeah.
It's so nice to know that you don't live by that.
And it's not who you are. Your condition doesn't define you as a person.
Exactly, yeah. It was a long journey, though, because for a long time I thought, this is it. This is how I'm going to feel forever, because the treatments I had previously been given hadn't worked. And in fact, something I like to tell people that's quite interesting is kind of surrounding stigma in the mental health profession, because I was warned off of getting the diagnosis. And when I was getting treatment in the NHS, I had mental health nurses who were doing some of the testing say, are you really sure you want to go through with this test? Because if you do have borderline personality disorder, it's like a life sentence. That diagnosis will follow you everywhere forever. Are you sure you don't want to just stick with depressive episodes? And I was like, well, no, because I can't access the treatment for BPD unless I have the diagnosis. Like, you can't get like knee surgery on a broken knee if they write it down as a broken elbow. So
yeah,
that was like, really frustrating.
Where's the logic?
Exactly.
Like, you've just got to be honest. I can definitely relate, sir. I had years of asking people what was wrong with me and asking health professionals, and no one ever told me that it was anxiety and that I had acute anxiety. They said it was the transition between childhood to adulthood, which I literally want to just punch every single person out there. And it was only from, so I've had it since I was 11, it was only till I was 21 till someone actually said anxiety, and then everything kind of fell into place. And that's when I started getting therapy and stuff, because I literally thought I was crazy. I thought, this is just who I am, I'm going to be feeling like this forever, like you thought you were going to as well. And it's just, it's horrible. That's why it needs to be spoken about.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that if somebody doesn't feel like they're being understood or listened to, or that nobody's quite nailed their symptoms, then they need to keep pushing and keep looking for more answers, or maybe answers from different people, second opinions, third opinions even sometimes. Yeah.
So how has, if you've experienced like, you know, really strong feelings of anxiety, how have BPD and anxiety affected each other?
That's a good question. I think they feed into each other. I have anxiety and BPD. My anxiety really pushed my BPD on, I think. The thing with BPD is you have this overarching fear of abandonment, and it warps your perception of reality. So I would, for no apparent reason, think that people would leave me. And if they weren't going to leave me, I would push their buttons to test if they would leave me. And if they passed the test, I wouldn't be satisfied and probably would fall out with them to see again if pushing their buttons would make them leave. Or if they did leave, I would then go into a total meltdown, because they'd left and I was right all along, which is really ridiculous, because whoever was in that situation with me, there was no way for them to win. So that made me very anxious about people. I didn't trust people because I thought they were going to leave. I thought, well, they don't like me. I couldn't trust what I was saying to them. I didn't think anything was like in confidence. I thought people had agendas. And also my anxiety was also just at some points, I can't even believe how bad it must have been, but I didn't know any different. Like, I thought that was everybody's normal, in inverted commas. For example, everybody always asked me, Chelsea, why do you walk so fast? And I literally, like, my walking speed is like slow running. I always thought something was going to happen to me. So I would be walking along the street and if people were laughing on the other side of the street, it was definitely about me. Or if somebody was walking up behind me, they were going to attack me, they were going to kill me, they were plotting against me. Just really, really irrational thoughts about strangers I'd never seen or met before. Like, why would a random stranger in the street kill me in broad daylight in front of like other people in the town? Like, it doesn't make any sense. But I genuinely, genuinely believed that from the bottom of my heart. And that really affected me because I was so scared to do anything. And it wasn't just mental symptoms, it was physical as well. Like, I would shake and I would tense up and I was exhausted all the time because my body just lived on high alert. Like, I was always waiting for something really bad to happen. So yeah, they've definitely affected each other. But I've noticed that as I've addressed my BPD, my anxiety hasn't been as bad because I'm able to rationalize things better and think in a way that is more in proportion with how reality is.
It must have been really isolating.
Definitely, especially because I didn't know that I was not the only one experiencing this, but like that everybody else didn't necessarily experience what I was going through. As I said, a lot of the symptoms I had, I didn't even realise till I got to therapy that these weren't everyday experiences for the vast majority of the population.
I think with anxiety as well, like you said, because your BPD warps your sense of reality and everything that goes on around you. And anxiety is something that it on its own is just like, it's like having a jetpack on overthinking.
I love that analogy.
But moving on to the next one, is there any stigmas around BPD that you don't necessarily agree with or that, like, you know, you really want to squash?
Yeah, definitely. I already touched upon stigma within the mental health profession, but you see a lot of people with BPD, even like on their profiles, like if they're like a BPD advocate, some of them ask people not to Google BPD. And that's because there are articles written about the condition by people who don't have the condition who make us out to be some kind of monster. And I just totally don't agree with that. I actually remember writing into like a major psychology magazine, like a big print magazine, because some, in inverted commas, doctor had written an article basically vilifying people with BPD and like encouraging people to avoid us and to not get into romantic relationships with us and whatnot. And I'm like, that's so unfair. Everybody with BPD is different. Everybody navigates relationships differently. Was I a difficult person to have a relationship in the past? Yes. Am I still somebody that might be a bit different in terms of relationships? Yeah, definitely. Like, there are little things I ask from people that I think make life easier for the both of us. Like, even with my friends, for example, I still worry that people will leave me sometimes. It's much more rational, it's much less frequent, but like if my friends are going away to a cabin for the weekend and they're not going to have their phones, but normally we text all day every day, all I ask is that they say, hey Chelsea, I'm going away for the weekend, I'm not going to have my phone on me, I'm still here, we're still friends, but I'm just going to be too busy to talk. And that automatically just takes away that anxiety that something is wrong, or that I've done something, or that they don't like me anymore, or that they never liked me. But yeah, there's so many things I would love to squash. But I just wish that there were more books and resources written by people with BPD, talk about their lived experiences and humanize the condition. Because yeah, sometimes I feel a bit dehumanized when I read some of the things that people have written.
I think that's one of the reasons that we started this, because there's so many professional and dehumanized ways of talking about mental health.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just comforting and less isolating when people just talk about it.
What were the signs when you were younger that you had like a mental health problem?
Oh, it's hard to think that far back, you know, but I think it probably just started with just really disproportionate feelings of like, I wasn't just depressed, like my whole world was coming down around me. I was like skipping school, but I was being smart about it. Like nobody ever knew I wasn't there from my family. I always thought it was just because I was bullied at school, but I did start to realize that like, I can't go on like this. Like I didn't want to be alive anymore. And, you know, that's something that you need to address. And I would think I was searching for answers to how I was feeling because I couldn't articulate how I was feeling. And that's one of the reasons that I'm a big advocate for speaking about mental health, because I have found my voice now. But I know that there are people out there who haven't found theirs yet and don't know how to articulate what they're going through. But yeah, I think it just started with like really, really deeply depressive feelings. And then I learned also about the anxiety. As I said, I thought the anxiety stemmed from like being picked on at school. But there were loads of other things going on that I didn't realise were traumas at the time. So I think, yeah, it probably started there. And then as I got bigger and uglier, I was able to recognise that other symptoms I was experiencing were symptoms. They weren't just everyday life.
So with everything you've kind of experienced and gone through, have you developed your own kind of like coping mechanisms, or like learnt your own coping mechanisms?
A lot of mine came from therapy. But there are things that I do to help me cope. Like I speak with my mum about things a lot and she helps me to rationalise them. Like I'm quite self-aware, which is annoying because I know that things are going kind of skew-iff, but I can't necessarily take a hold of them and put them back in their box, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, I try and speak to somebody who can help me rationalise it. So I'll say, look, I'm experiencing this. I have a feeling that I am not being rational, or that this isn't how things might actually be, or I feel like I'm overthinking it. can I explain it to you? And can we just chat back and forth about like what you think of the situation? And it works sometimes, but obviously everyone that I'm friends with will be a little bit biased. So I need to take it with a little pinch of salt. But I definitely think talking about things is my biggest coping mechanism. And then, yeah, skills that I've learned in therapy. I have sort of, my therapist and I came up with like characters for different parts of, I don't know if you would call them parts of my personality, but different experiences that I have. And by giving them characters, it almost separates them from me. I can't remember what they are now because it's been a little while since I saw my therapist, but you know, they would be like the sad bear or like the angry badger, or like they were like woodland creatures with feelings. Yeah. So I talk about my feelings as these little creatures. And I don't know if this would work for anybody else or if anybody else uses this technique, but it really does help me like put them back into perspective and put them in like a little box and help to deal with them.
I think that's so, it's so bizarre that you said that, because I named my anxiety Steve, and it's so, so bizarre, but it kind of done the same thing, where I could separate him from myself, so I could go, okay, look, you are clearly not okay right now, and you kind of have this weird conversation with yourself about like, you need to tell me what you're thinking so I can understand, because you're feeling all of this feeling, Steve, and I have no idea why. Like, I try to think of it as you name a pet so that you can train it, because that pet learns its name and then you, you know, control it in quotation marks by that name. And I always thought that if I could name it, I could then find some sense of control over what I was feeling, I guess.
I think that's a really like an intelligent approach.
Yeah, and it's weird someone else saying that they done like the kind of same thing, but it is like, it's the thing is, you have to do whatever works for you, and that's the most important thing. If it works, then it works.
So you've mentioned therapy and being on medication. How did you find being on medication? Because I know I've got a few people in my life who are going into that transition of going into medication and therapies and starting both of them. How did you find everything?
So I think the first thing to note is that there is no specific medication that's licensed or made for BPD. There are medications that can reduce some of the symptoms of BPD, but they don't address the whole condition, if that makes sense. So I take an antipsychotic medication in a really low dose. And in really low doses, like they can take the edge off of anxiety and things like that. So I, for many years, was on a medication called quetiapine, and it would help me sleep. It was like a sedating medication. And part of my action plan was that if I was feeling really, really terrible, which normally you can't talk me out of, and normally just need to like sleep it off or kind of wait it out, then I would take my medication and I would just go to sleep, and I would hopefully wake up and kind of be able to reset my perspective. So I was on that for a long time. I'm actually just coming off of medications just now because my lifestyle has changed a lot. But yeah, I think medication definitely has its place in reducing certain symptoms, especially if you're very anxious, that can really help. But the big thing that helped me was I went to mentalization-based therapy, which is a therapy that was like specifically created for people that have BPD. It's a talking therapy. It helps you to, or at least it helped me, to learn how to rationalize and process things that were happening in the here and now rather than focusing too much on the past. So we would talk about like how my day had been going or how my last week had been going since I last was in therapy. And we would talk about my experiences and I would explain how I felt about them. And then we would talk about like whether or not that is a good perception or a good analysis of what actually happened. And I had to relearn from the scratch to kind of analyze how other people were thinking. I know that you can't tell what people are thinking, but I had to learn to stop assuming that people didn't like me. I had to learn to stop assuming that, you know, people were going to leave and that they weren't trustworthy and that they hated me or that there was some agenda. It's really funny because about a year after I started therapy, I went back to my hometown for like a big music gig, and I was in the middle of the dance floor and I spotted a guy who I had spoken to at parties a lot. And he came up to me and he was like, oh my God, Chelsea, you're so different. And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, your eyes look different. The way you carry your shoulders looks different. The way you hold your head is different. The way you're engaging with people is different. The way you're talking is different. Everything about you is so different. And that was like a pivotal point for me where I realized that like therapy had been making a difference. And then I was able to sort of look back and think, oh my God, he's right. Like things are really different. And I'm not experiencing a lot of the things that I used to experience on a daily basis. So yeah, the benefits were huge. I mean, the reason that I'm now coming off of medication is because I've sort of graduated, in inverted commas, from therapy. I like to call it graduating because it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
And a lot of commitment.
So much work.
After all that, I don't maybe need the medication so much now. So we're going to give it a go and see what happens. But yeah, that's my experience with medication and therapy.
Has there been any self-implemented changes in your life that you feel has benefited your mental health?
Yes. So the big one for me is sobriety. A lot of people that have BPD are prone to sort of risk-taking behaviours, as they would call it. So that could be anything from excessive spending to drinking too much alcohol, taking drugs, gambling, lots of things that could negatively impact your life if they were taken a bit too far, I guess. And I was going out and partying all the time and would quite often go to these things every weekend. And I was so convinced, I was like, everybody goes out every weekend and that's totally fine. Like, it's not affecting me. Oh, I see. I'm not the only person at these parties that go on all night and all day. So obviously it's not a bad thing. But actually, while other people might have been able to cope with that, it was really negatively affecting me because I didn't have the sort of emotional resilience to deal with BPD and then deal with like really bad hangovers and the sort of longer effects of alcohol and things like that. So yeah, sobriety has really, really helped me and I manage my symptoms a lot better now and I don't experience some of the more severe symptoms quite so often. So yeah, there are lots of little things as well. Like I'm trying cold showers after my hot showers to help with anxiety in the mornings, help like reset, just trying to get some exercise, healthy eating. The stuff that I used to roll my eyes at, I'd be like, ugh, self-care, how, like as if that would ever help me, as if self-care would ever even touch the sides with what I'm feeling. And I mean, I guess to an extent that was true because before therapy, these things on their own wouldn't necessarily have gotten me to a point where I felt able to live like a normal daily life, if that's the right phrase to put it. Looking after yourself is really important, but I think some people are like, oh, well, I need to start healthy eating, fitness, better bedtime, etc., etc. And they make this plan and they're like, okay, starting Monday, I'm getting up at 6 a.m. and then I'm going for a run and then I'm going to eat quinoa and then all this stuff. But actually for me, I found that like I had to take things step by step. I don't think I would have been able to stick with any of these behaviors if I had just tried to kind of go cold turkey on my old lifestyle and just start this new fabulous lifestyle all overnight. So yeah, that's sort of the self-implemented changes that I have incorporated.
Well, I just wanted to say that I'm really grateful that you've come on.
Yes, thank you very much.
Just because you've educated, I'm speaking for Elliot as well, but you've really educated us here with this. Like, we didn't know much about it, so it was really insightful. And it just reiterates why we're doing this, why you talk about it, to educate people who don't know much about it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. I really enjoyed it.
Honestly, thank you so much, Chelsea. So good. Amazing. This is it.
See you next week.
Love you.
Bye.
Don't forget, guys, to drop us a like or a review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Spotify.
Or even jump onto our Instagram at Wine and Problems. See you next week.